Dedicated to the survival of American democracy in an increasingly dangerous world, this is Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney, acted as Assistant Secretary of Defense for International Security Policy under President Ronald Reagan, founder and president of the Center for Security Policy in Washington, D.C., the go-to man for defense and foreign policy issues, joined by the greatest minds in the security policy business, the special forces in the war of ideas at Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney.
Welcome to Secure Freedom Radio. This is Frank Gaffney, your host and guide for an intelligence briefing on what I think of as the war for the free world. It is an extraordinary privilege to have with us a man who knows something about intelligence. Indeed, he has been in a previous life a military intelligence officer of the United States Army. He is a member of its, or now a veteran member of its elite 82nd Airborne Division, and has deployed in the past to Iraq in the middle of what was then known as Operation Iraqi Freedom. He is Congressman Lee Zeldin, a freshman member of the House of Representatives, representing the people of the 1st District of New York, and a member, among other things, of the Subcommittee on Terrorism, Nonproliferation, and Trade, as well as that of the Middle East and North Africa at the Foreign Affairs Committee. In the House of Representatives, he is also the co-chairman of the Republican Israel Caucus, and we're delighted to have him here for the first time. Welcome, Congressman, to Washington and to Secure Freedom Radio.
Thank you, Frank. It's good to be on with you.
I don't know where to begin. There's so much to talk with you about, but maybe I might start, given your role in the Republican Israel Caucus, to ask you about both the now much denounced decision by the Speaker of the House to have Bibi Netanyahu address a joint session of Congress, which the president has objected strenuously on the grounds that this somehow is interfering with the election there to happen shortly, and what you make of the president's political team parachuting in, speaking of parachuters, to Israel, apparently for exactly that purpose, against Bibi Netanyahu.
Well, I'm looking forward to having the Israeli Prime Minister come address a joint session of Congress. My position and those of others who welcome the Prime Minister coming to Congress has been criticized as saying that it undercuts America's foreign policy. You know, one congressman on the other side of the aisle a few days ago said that it used the word subversion. And, you know, it should never be perceived as undercutting America's foreign policy when we're having the Israeli Prime Minister come to the United States. And my thought is that if it undercuts America's foreign policy to have the Israeli Prime Minister come address a joint session of Congress, then there's something wrong with America's foreign policy. There should be no daylight between our countries. We have some great allies around the world. There is no stronger ally than Israel. The president has, through one action after another, we've seen growing daylight between his administration and that of the Israeli Prime Minister. And it's unfortunate. Last summer when the Prime Minister made a decision that enough was enough, they wanted to go on offense and root out Hamas so that the Israeli people wouldn't have to live in fear. The message from the White House was urging patience on the part of Israelis while praising the Palestinian Authority. So now that the Prime Minister is coming, we hear the president say that he does not want to meet with the prime minister because it's so close to the Israeli election and he wouldn't want to show any type of favoritism or influence the election, yet he is sending an army of Obama campaign staffers in Israel, from his national field director to on down those who had leadership roles in Organizing for America. And they're over there trying to oust the Israeli prime minister. So it's just one action after another. And I think that the invite to the prime minister sends an important message that to the Israelis that America and Congress is filled with many members, many U.S. citizens who stand hand in hand with the Israelis, despite what we're seeing from the administration. And one other thing about it, too, is that Congress, some have said that Congress has no role in foreign policy. And this week, I took the opportunity to reread a precious document that I have read and studied in the past. I remember taking classes on it during college and law school, It's called the U.S. Constitution, and in it, there are multiple references to Congress's authority with regards to foreign policy, whether it's the declaration of war, the ratification of treaties, the power of the purse. The list goes on, and the president's section of that Constitution is obviously significantly smaller. So understanding the intent of our founding fathers, I would suggest that Congress is an equal branch of our government and absolutely has a constitutional duty to be aware and engaged, involved in America's foreign policy. It is an equal branch with the President of the United States.
Yeah, not least providing for the common defense, as I recall, is part and parcel of that constitutional responsibility. And it's bracing and extraordinarily welcome to hear a member of Congress, a freshman member at that, speaking so thoughtfully and directly about the importance of the checks and balances in our system of government provided for in a constitution that, unfortunately, the president seems quite determined to render inoperative at every turn. Again, our guest is Congressman Lee Zeldin, a newly minted member of Congress from the 1st District of New York. He is a member of the Foreign Affairs Committee, the Veterans Affairs Committee, also serves on the Transportation and Infrastructure Committee. Let me ask you, if I may, Congressman, as you look at this issue of daylight between the United States and Israel, do you think that that is conducive to a sense on the part of, well, Hezbollah most recently, the folks in Hamas in Gazastan, as they might be called, Iran perhaps as well, backing both Hezbollah and Hamas, of course, that this is a moment to really engage more aggressively with the Israelis because there is now, some distance between the United States government and that of Israel?
Well, I think that this president believes that weakness somehow, and I believe in American exceptionalism. America's the greatest nation in the world. I'm going to apologize for that. I'm not going to be embarrassed to say that. I love this country. There are elements out there that do not respect weakness. They only respect strength. And it seems like from all the different examples that you give and others that would come to mind, the president, in a way, I mean, you see it with regards to our relations with Cuba, our relations with Iran, and other countries. It's almost like the president just wants to take our leverage just off the table in good faith. And it's a bizarre tactic that unravels just decades and generations worth of sacrifice by our veterans, by our diplomats, by our nation at large. So I think that there is there's an inconsistency to America's weak policy that is creating opportunities to fill a vacuum. When America just steps back from a particular situation that we have been involved in, we have a lot of challenges here at home that need our attention, that need our focus. We're dealing with countries and elements within them that they don't just want to wipe Israel off the map. They want to destroy America and our way of life. And we have to look at this conflict with radical Islamic extremism, not as a threat, facing France today, and it's just, one particular, in the 24-hour news cycle, or the 48-hour news cycle one week, we're just talking about Paris. So fighting radical Islamic extremism means, protecting France. No, this is a threat to our way of life, for us, for our allies around the world. And, sometimes, you could go out looking for a fight. Sometimes a fight finds you.
Yes, it does. Congressman Lee Zeldin, this is, I hope, the first of many conversations with you over the course of a distinguished career on Capitol Hill. I appreciate tremendously your service to our country to date and that is now in prospect, and taking a bit of time to help us calibrate on what the administration is doing here and what the implications are if Congress does not, in fact, play the sort of role, providing, as I said, for the common defense that it is supposed to, will mean for all of us. Thank you, sir, for joining us, and I do hope it'll be not too long before you're back with us. Keep up the great work, and we'll speak next with career intelligence professional Fred Flights on the Truth Squad we conducted yesterday on Iran, and the truth more generally about the global jihad. Straight ahead.
Visit us at facebook.com/securefreedom with Frank Gaffney.
Over the past decade, while the American military and intelligence community have been engaged in a kinetic war overseas against a wide array of enemies aligned with the global jihadist movement, the Center for Security Policy has consistently shed light upon a dark and subversive effort that thrives nearly unopposed right here in this country, the one known by the Muslim Brotherhood as Civilization Jihad. In an effort to educate freedom-loving Americans about Civilization Jihad and how it has been waged against every facet of American civilization, the Center for Security Policy has, in 2015, begun publishing a series of monographs called the Civilization Jihad Reader Series. The first of these monographs is entitled Sharia in American Courts, and it documents how Sharia, divine Islamic law, which animates the global jihadist movement, has entered our very own court system. In this study, the Center documents how parties to litigation in American appellate courts have attempted to use Sharia to resolve 146 cases in 32 different states, potentially threatening the constitutional rights of our citizens, particularly women and children. The monograph not only highlights these cases, but the organizations here in America that are actively and successfully working to insinuate Sharia into our judiciary. Finally, it provides information on at least one antidote to this infirmity, a law that has been adopted in 8 states, one that protects our citizens against the use of foreign law and upholds our Constitution as the supreme law of the land, lest those who fight to defend our Constitution overseas do not come home to see it subordinated in a courtroom in their own home state. Learn more by reading Sharia in American Courts, which can be found on Amazon.com or the Center for Security Policy's website at www.securefreedom.org.
Hi, this is Frank Gaffney. My day job is running the Center for Security Policy, which each weeknight brings you this program. But Secure Freedom Radio is just one of the important contributions the Center makes to the common defense. We call our team the Special Forces in the War of Ideas. Like the real Special Forces, we strive to be agile, creative, and highly effective in identifying threats to our country and how they might best be countered. We can't do all this without you, though. Also, like the real Special Forces, ours need ammunition. And in the war of ideas, ammo is money. The Center is a nonprofit, tax-exempt organization. Contributions to its work are tax-deductible and an important investment in your security and freedom. Find out more about the Center for Security Policy and how you can help keep its Special Forces team in the fight by visiting securefreedom.org. Many thanks.
Ready to roll?
Go for it.
Hi, I'm Jessie Jane Duff. I'm a retired United States Marine Corps Gunnery Sergeant, and I served 20 years on active duty serving this great country. I'm with Concerned Veterans for America now. After I got off active duty, I realized I still wanted to be involved and help change the direction our country is going. Concerned Veterans for America offered me that great opportunity. If you want to get involved and you're thinking of getting involved, please visit our website because we have many activities throughout the nation. We have wonderful representatives in each state who are putting forward different ways you can become engaged. So go to the website at concernedveteransforamerica.org, and you do not have to be a veteran. But if you support the freedoms that we all fought so hard for to defend this great nation, then consider participating in the many activities we are participating in and helping to change the direction our country is going.
This is Frank Effney. You're listening to AM 1260, The Answer.
You're listening to Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney from the nation's capital in Washington, D.C.
Welcome back. We're joined by my friend and colleague, Fred Flights, a career intelligence professional, now a senior fellow with the Center for Security Policy. I'm very pleased to say he's spent time, some 20 years, as an analyst at the Central Intelligence Agency, tracking down, among other things, the proliferation of weapons of mass destruction. He has also served as the chief of staff to then Undersecretary of State, later Ambassador John Bolton, and as a professional staff member of the House Select Committee on Intelligence. Fred, that background suited you very well when you spoke with great effect yesterday at what we called the Iran Truth Squad up on Capitol Hill. Tell our audience a little bit about the nature of the program, your particular contribution to it, and the takeaway in terms of what we should be doing in the face of, the administration's lies on the one hand and the danger emanating from Iran on the other.
Frank, it's good to be here. This was a program that came at an important time. Many of us have been concerned about things that the administration has been saying in foreign policy for a long time that we don't think have been exactly true. But this truth squad was sparked by what the president said in his State of the Union address when he indicated that the Iranian nuclear program had been frozen and its enriched uranium stockpile has been reduced. These statements are objectively false, and the Center has done several assessments of this. They're available on our website, securefreedom.org. We did a major analysis in November to talk about how, when the president came to office, Iran could make no nuclear weapons from its enriched uranium. Now, it can make at least 8, and there are some experts who say that our assessment is actually conservative. They can make more than that. So we talked yesterday both about the nature of the threat and how the challenge from Iran's nuclear program is very, very serious, and the American people are frankly being lied to.
This, unfortunately, is not confined to simply the Iranian nuclear program, as we established with Claire Lopez, our colleague at the center, with Andrew Bostom, one of the country's preeminent authorities on the character of the Iranian regime and its jihadist doctrine. The former ambassador from Israel to the congressional liaison, Yoram Eniger, Congressman Trent Franks, former commander-in-chief of the Pacific Fleet, Admiral Ace Lyons. The message couldn't have been more unmistakable, Fred, and I'm gratified, and I do encourage people to take a look at the video of this series of presentations at securefreedom.org. But the issue takes on even greater urgency in light of some of the developments that we've seen in the region beyond. And maybe we could talk a bit about what the Iranians seem to be up to in Yemen at the moment and what that portends, not just for that country, but perhaps for Saudi Arabia, among other places.
Well, the concern about Yemen, and everyone's talking about how Houthi rebels, this is an Islamist group from North Yemen. They forced the government out of office a week ago. But this is an extension of Iranian influence in the region. And I think that's true. Last year, Saudi Arabia declared the Houthis a terrorist group. They think they are a proxy of Iran. But this is a much worse situation than anyone realizes. AQAP, the most dangerous al-Qaeda franchise, al-Qaeda in the Arabian Peninsula, had been losing ground over the last year, but they are bouncing back because of the political chaos. ISIS has a presence in Yemen and is competing for AQAP for followers. In addition to that, there's a new Muslim Brotherhood party in Yemen known as ISWA, which is a great concern to the Yemenis. So we now have a government that is certainly going to be dominated by the Iranians on Saudi Arabia's border. And this is the traditional route for invading Saudi Arabia, which Egyptian President Nasser was hoping to contemplate before the Israelis knocked him off in the 1960s. It's a major international security development.
And incredibly important, as you say, not least because, Fred, of the changes that have been underway in Saudi Arabia at the moment, which add a measure of instability to that government. The president stopped by there, as a member of Congress shared with me the other day. You know, he can't find time to meet with Bibi Netanyahu, but he would drop everything to meet with this new king, who has a rather checkered record when it comes to the kind of support for jihadism that has constituted really the double game Saudi Arabia has engaged in for many, many years. But Fred, let me turn to another controversy that is swirling in official Washington at the moment, and that is the reported finding, no surprise really, but the reported finding that the man that President Obama swapped 5 top Taliban commanders for was in fact a deserter, Bo Bergdahl. Tell us about your assessment of the president's negotiating tradecraft, shall we say, not just with respect to Iran, but with respect to this kind of behavior in this particular case, but more broadly, negotiating with terrorists. Do you buy the argument that was advanced by a press spokesman at the White House yesterday that the Taliban aren't terrorists, they're insurgents, and therefore it's okay, it's just a prisoner exchange?
It's always been bizarre that this administration will not classify the Taliban as a terrorist organization. Of course it's a terrorist organization. It engages in acts of terror, including bombings, assassinations, brutal killings. The White House is claiming this is an insurgency group. Well, I guess ISIS is only an insurgency group, too, and not a terrorist group. It was a ridiculous contention by this administration. But what's behind it, Frank, is that this administration is looking for a way out of Afghanistan. And they know the Taliban is going to take over that government. And by claiming this, when that happens, they can claim they did not hand control of Afghanistan to terrorists.
Yeah, it will be small comfort, I'm sure, to the people of Afghanistan, who will be terrorized by these guys for sure, as well as presumably the others in the jihadist movement who will once again be free to operate from that soil that we had liberated at great expense to Americans and most especially to our servicemen and women. Fred Flights is our guest. He is a career intelligence professional, a man whose intelligence, both of the native kind and of the professional kind, is highly prized by those of us at the Center for Security Policy, and I think, indeed, people all over Washington and the country. Fred, let me finally turn to another aspect of the president's rather bizarre and worrying conduct with respect to elements of this global jihadist movement. You, of course, were one of the contributors to our study, our Secure Freedom strategy. But what did you make of the report that the administration entertained a delegation of Muslim Brotherhood leaders from Egypt at the State Department earlier this week?
It simply shows that this administration doesn't get it. They don't recognize a threat from the radical jihad movement. They don't recognize people who are part of this movement. And at the same time, when Israeli Prime Minister Netanyahu comes to Washington in March, the president has said he won't meet with him. So he's meeting with Muslim Brotherhood representatives who are linked to a terrorist organization, but not the leader of one of our closest friends.
Yeah, and the effect of that, unfortunately, on the folks that we're talking about here, as you know so well, Fred Flights, is that they interpret this as evidence of our submission to them and their demands that we distance ourselves from Israel, their demands that we accommodate through one form or fashion or another, their, you know, insistence on concessions, and like five top Taliban commanders in exchange for one deserter. And, of course, in the case of Saudi Arabia, the turning a blind eye to the double game, including notably, but not exclusively, the Saudis' recent announcement that they were manipulating the price of oil for the purpose of destroying the U.S. fracking industry. This hardly seems like the kind of reliable ally that one should be paying court to. Fred Flights, all of this and so much more is the subject of your close attention. We're very appreciative of your sharing your thoughts with us from time to time and look forward to doing so with you again. I hope next week. In the meantime, keep up the great work you're doing now at the Center for Security Policy. Next up, John Sitalides joins us to talk about the radical new government of Greece and what it means for Europe, NATO, and us. Straight ahead.
Visit us at facebook.com/securefreedom with Frank Gaffney.
America's injured and critically ill service members face incredible challenges every day of their lives. Since 2004, the Semper Fi Fund has helped thousands of service members and their families with both immediate and long-term needs. Join the Semper Fi Fund in supporting American heroes. They've given so much. Now it's our turn. Learn how your tax-deductible donation makes a real difference in their lives at SemperFiFund.org.
This is Frank Gaffney with the Secure Freedom Minute. totalitarians have long employed the big lie to obscure reality and mislead their publics. They just repeat a falsehood often and authoritatively enough, and most people will eventually come to believe it's true. President Obama has lately been trying his hand at it with respect to Iran. He insists that his diplomacy has frozen and even rolled back the Iranian nuclear program, and that a deal this spring will usher in a new era of peaceable relations between our two countries. When confronted with a big lie, a truth squad is needed. The Center for Security Policy presented one on Capitol Hill yesterday. It showed the regime in Tehran is relentlessly hostile towards us, engaged in global jihad, determined to acquire nuclear weapons, and playing Team Obama for fools. Check out the Truth Squad at securefreedom.org. This is Frank Afte with the Secure Freedom Minute.
There are many sounds in your daily life. Ones that make you smile. Ones that help you relax. And there are some sounds that can help save lives. Wireless emergency alerts, now on many mobile devices, use a unique sound and vibration to bring you critical information about emergencies in your area. With updates from local sources you know and trust, you can be in the know wherever you are. Learn more at ready.gov/alerts. Brought to you by FEMA and the Ad Council.
When we decided to rename this radio station, we came up with one word, one very big word, answer. That's because we know our listeners better than anybody. We know you wake up every day with an insatiable appetite for news and information. But more than that, you want to know what to make of it all. No matter what happens, if it matters to you and you listen long enough, you'll learn what it means and different ways to think about it. That's why we're here. Do this better than any station in town. Welcome aboard. AM 1260, The Answer.
Navigating this world when you are undereducated can be difficult. I'm Dr. Ben Carson, and I know this for a fact. When I was growing up, my family lived in dire poverty, and because of my poor learning skills, my classmates called me dummy. My life began to turn around when my mother encouraged me to read. I went from the bottom of my class to graduating from Yale University and becoming the youngest director of pediatric neurosurgery at Johns Hopkins Hospital. I know how important it is to nurture a child's dream.
When I grow up, I want to become a scientist.
I want to be a doctor, just like Ben Carson.
I hope to become an engineer.
I want to be a teacher or maybe a broadcaster.
The Carson Scholars Fund is impacting schools across the nation by encouraging children to read, write, and excel at math and science so they can realize their dreams. We need your help. To learn more about the Carson Scholars Fund and to donate, visit our website at carsonscholars.org.
After all, the person who has the most to do with your success is you.
This is Frank Effney. You're listening to AM 1260, The Answer.
Now more with Frank Gaffney.
Welcome back. We are joined, I'm very pleased to say, for the first time by John Sitalides, a man whose expertise in matters involving Southeast Europe has been drawn upon by the State Department as a consultant on their diplomatic activities in that part of the world, by the Woodrow Wilson Center in Washington, D.C. Its Southeast Europe project was chaired by John for 5 years. He is today a principal in Trilogy Advisors, LLC, a federal government advisory firm, and a welcome guest here at Secure Freedom Radio. John, thank you very much for joining us to talk about most especially the big doings in Greece at the moment as a result of the election there last week. Welcome. Good to have you with us.
It's a pleasure to be with you, Frank. Thank you.
So talk about the party that is now running Greece, effectively, if not in isolation, but the party that has best been described, as I understand it, as kind of a radical left-wing, indeed, communist party. Is that correct?
Well, Syriza, Frank, is the acronym for Coalition of the Radical Left. So it's not accused of being radical. They are blatantly and proudly so. And it's a coalition of openly Marxist, anti-capitalist, eco-warrior, Trotskyite parties, more than a dozen or so. And Tsipras has been the leader of this movement for the better part of the last 5 years or so, and really came out of nowhere, was scoring about 3-4% of the vote in elections until 2009-2010, and when Greece announced that it had been faking the books in terms of its relationship with the European Union and the Eurozone, and it really had run out of cash to run what is a bloated bureaucracy and a statist economy. Ever since then, and the depression that the Greek people have suffered in the last 5 years, this group has come from nowhere, and now we have a NATO government that is led, as you correctly note, by communists, Marxists, and people with a potentially and decidedly anti-Western, anti-U.S. Orientation.
Let's talk about what that translates into as a matter of policy, John Sitalides. We have most immediately, I guess, a mandate for these guys to renege on the deal with Europe that resulted in a bailout not so long ago. What are the implications for the European Union and perhaps the euro itself?
Well, Syriza is coming to the table wanting a write-off of the debt that now totals more than $250 billion. It had been $100 billion more a couple of years ago, and then the private debt to bondholders was wiped out, and it rattled the markets in Europe. And of course, the U.S. has a great interest in a healthy European Union economy. They are our largest trading partners as a bloc. They are critical to our export industries. And of course, there's a geostrategic consideration here in that European cohesiveness is a very important element of American foreign policy and security policy, especially with all of the crises that we now see in the Middle East, with Russia and in Northern Africa. And so for Syriza to come to the table, demand a complete debt write-off and the easing of conditions under which Greece received these hundreds of billions of dollars in European aid, makes for, how do we put this, a very difficult negotiating process. The Europeans want very much to maintain Greece's membership in the Eurozone, but they have made very clear that the financial aid that was made available to Greece came with conditions, and not only have the Greeks not met those conditions under the prior governments, but this new government, now days old, has already reneged on serious elements of those conditions, including serious lifting of the minimum wage, hiring back public employees who had been laid off in order to minimize the size of this bloated bureaucracy, and a series of privatization plans to sell off assets that were an unusually large amount of assets for a so-called free market economy in the West. Those privatization plans have all been canceled, rattling major powers such as China, which had major privatization interests in Greece. And so I think this is going to be off to a rocky start. And Frank, let me just add that even though we have this coalition that is now the governing party in Greece, to really cross the threshold to a comfortable level of seats in the Greek parliament, they immediately entered into a coalition with a party called Independent Greeks, which is a populist, nationalist, anti-memorandum, right, anti-Eurozone, not against the Eurozone, but against the conditions imposed on Greece in the Eurozone, so that Tsipras can go to Angela Merkel and to European officials and say, this rejection of the conditions you've imposed on our country spans the political spectrum from extreme left to extreme right. And I think it'll take a few days to get a sense as to how serious the Europeans are about holding fast to their position that they want to be supportive of Greece. They want to continue providing the aid that Greece desperately needs. But Greece must undergo critical structural reforms that have been avoided assiduously for the most part by the Greek government in the last 5 years. And I'm more concerned that we are going to see a series of showdowns on these financial issues. And that, of course, may then spill over into European cohesion on a number of critical foreign policy issues, including sanctions on Russia.
Yeah, well, let's turn to that. That, of course, is something that is being discussed as we speak. John Sitalides, we are not sure at the moment as to the upshot of it, but it sounded as though this new communist, among other radical leftist government in Greece, is indicating that they will not go along with any further sanctions on Russia, despite what Vladimir Putin is now doing to double down, I guess is one way of putting it, on Ukraine. What if there is, in fact, now no longer any cohesion on the part of the Europeans? How do you think that might play into the other difficulties that you've just described? And well, for that matter, our security interests in Greece as well.
Well, let's put some of this in the context of recent statements by Syriza, especially in the run-up to the election. A Syriza manifesto that was issued in 2013, Frank, called for Greece withdrawing from the NATO alliance. It called for closing the geostrategically critical Souda Bay naval base in Crete, which is the largest naval facility available to the United States and to Western powers in the Eastern Mediterranean to project military power into the Middle East and into Northern Africa. They have been very, very sympathetic to the radical Palestinian cause and issued rhetoric about Israel ending its criminal attacks and brutality against the Palestinian people. And there seems to be some significant sympathy on the part of leading members of the coalition for Russia. And it's interesting that the first foreign official that Prime Minister Alexei Tsipras met with upon becoming Prime Minister on Monday was the ambassador of Russia to Greece. And so Greece, just to be accurate here, Frank, is not the only country in the EU that is looking to put an argument against the sanctions that are looking now to be advanced because of the shelling attacks that killed 30 people in Ukraine several days ago. There are several other European Union countries that have also expressed concern, Austria, Slovenia, Cyprus, but it's the tenor and the demeanor of the Greek response that is making many in the European Union nervous. It seems to be rather reflexive, brash, how does one say, impolitic in the context of European diplomacy. And what many Europeans fear is that the Greek rejection of a consensus calling for tightening of sanctions on Russia is not a substantive position regarding that particular matter, but really more of a bargaining chip. Greece showing that it can weaken European cohesion on these critical foreign policy matters in order to strengthen its hand in the upcoming negotiations on the debt write-off and the easing of austerity conditions.
If these people have the kind of ideological DNA that you've described, that they mean to be both a force for undermining Europe and, I would guess, NATO as well, on the foreign policy agenda, as well as seeking to obtain concessions from Europe on the economic front, this is an ideological agenda that they will be pursuing, and it raises a hoary question, which we don't have time to talk about, but I hope we will on another occasion, which is, if now between Greece and Turkey, NATO's southeastern flank has really been compromised, to say the least, what are the implications for the NATO alliance at a time when Russian revanchism seems to be on the rise, and heavens knows there are a host of other threats as well? That's for another day. John Sitalidis, thank you so much for your expertise, your service to the country in various capacities, including that today at Trilogy Advisors, LLC. Do come back to us again soon if you would. Next up, Ambassador Roger Noriega joins us to talk about the assassination of a prosecutor in Argentina and the calamitous collapse of U.S. policy on Cuba.
Go to SecureFreedomRadio.org today. It's your freedom. It's your country. Frank Gaffney's Secure Freedom Radio.
This is Fred Fleitz with the Center for Security Policy. Something unusual occurred in the aftermath of President Obama's State of the Union address when Washington Post columnist Glenn Kessler cited research from the Center for Security Policy in his Fact Checker column to fault the truthfulness of the president's statements about his efforts to halt the threat from Iran's nuclear program. Kessler cited a chart prepared by the center showing that Iran's enrichment of uranium has surged since 2009 and that Iran can now make at least 8 nuclear weapons from its enriched uranium stockpile. It is unheard of for the mainstream media to cite conservatives on arms control issues. The Post's decision to cite the Center's research reflects both the high quality of our work as well as growing concerns about the president's Iran policy. You can read our report issued last November, Why Congress Must Repudiate the Nuclear Talks with Iran, on the SecureFreedom.org website. I'm Fred Fleitz.
Hi, this is Frank Gaffney. My day job is running the Center for Security Policy, which each weeknight brings you this program. But Secure Freedom Radio is just one of the important contributions the Center makes to the common defense. We call our team the Special Forces in the War of Ideas. Like the real Special Forces, we strive to be agile, creative, and highly effective in identifying threats to our country and how they might best be countered. We can't do all this without you, though. Also, like the real Special Forces, ours need ammunition. And in the War of Ideas, ammo is money. The Center is a nonprofit, tax-exempt organization. Contributions to its work are tax-deductible and an important investment in your security and freedom. Find out more about the Center for Security Policy and how you can help keep its Special Forces team in the fight by visiting securefreedom.org. Many thanks.
I'm Robert Muse, co-founder and senior counsel of the American Freedom Law Center, our nation's premier public interest law firm fighting for your faith and freedom in courtrooms across America. Make no mistake, we live in a pivotal time. Secular progressives such as Barack Obama and his surrogates are zealously sweeping religion from the public square, foisting Sharia law and other harmful international precedents into our courts and constitution, assaulting the traditional family, and weakening our national defense by, among other things, undermining the strength of our military through social engineering and political correctness. But I can assure you that the American Freedom Law Center is aggressively engaging our nation's enemies with offensive lawfare to defend our fundamental rights and to fight stealth jihad in all of its forms, including the civilization jihad being waged by Muslim Brotherhood front groups operating here in the U.S. Indeed, there is no other public interest law firm as uniquely qualified to fight this battle. But we need your prayers and financial support to succeed. Please consider a tax-deductible donation to support our critical fight for your faith and freedom. Visit us at www.AmericanFreedomLawCenter.org.
Great news for fans of Secure Freedom Radio. Now you can watch original Frank Gaffney and Center for Security Policy video content every day from the comfort of your living room. What makes this possible? A new video streaming service called Roku. All you need is a Roku player and a television to join the millions of Americans who customize their home viewing experience using the more than 1,000 Roku channels to access movies, TV shows, music, and more. When you add the cost-free Secure Freedom Roku channel, you'll gain unlimited streaming access to vital video products of the center, including Secure Freedom Radio, Capitol Hill and National Press Club events, intelligence briefings, Frank Gaffney's acclaimed 10-part Muslim Brotherhood in America course, and more. The Secure Freedom Roku channel integrates information and entertainment, establishing a new media battle space in the war for the free world. Go to securefreedom.org/ROKU today to learn how you can be a part of it. We hope you'll see us soon.
This is Jenny Thomas. I do video interviews of leaders with the Daily Caller. I had the privilege recently of interviewing Diana West about her extraordinary new book, American Betrayal, The Secret Assault on Our Nation's Character. You can see it at dailycaller.com. American Betrayal reads like a spellbinding historical thriller, but it is also a carefully documented account of how the U.S. government was penetrated by communist agents in the years after President Roosevelt normalized relations with the Soviet Union. Diana West shows how a similar assault is being mounted today by yet another collectivist ideology, the supremacist Islamic doctrine of Sharia. She establishes that while the communists and the Islamists may have very different visions of the world, they have employed the same techniques to defeat America. Please watch my conversation with Diana West about American Betrayal, then check out the other great leaders we profile at dailycaller.com.
America's injured and critically ill service members face incredible challenges every day of their lives. Since 2004, the Semper Fi Fund has helped thousands of service members and their families with both immediate and long-term needs. Join the Semper Fi Fund in supporting American heroes. They've given so much. Now it's our turn. Learn how your tax-deductible donation makes a real difference in their lives at SemperFiFund.org.
This is Frank Effney. You're listening to AM 1260, The Answer.
Go to SecureFreedomRadio.org today. It's your freedom. It's your country. Frank Gaffney's Secure Freedom Radio.
Welcome back. We're joined by Roger Noriega, our duty expert on matters involving our hemisphere, and there's been a lot going on in that part of the world. This used to be his portfolio when he was the Assistant Secretary of State for Western Hemisphere Affairs. He also had responsibilities as the U.S. representative to the Organization of American States. He is currently a visiting fellow with the American Enterprise Institute and a driving force behind a terrific online resource, InterAmericanSecurityWatch.com. Roger Noriega, welcome back. Always good to have you with us, sir.
Thank you for the opportunity, Frank.
Let's talk a little bit, if we can, first and foremost, about this murder, as it now appears to have been, of Alberto Nisman in Argentina. Quickly remind us who he was, why this would have been in the interest of some pretty unsavory people, including his own government.
Right. Well, Alberto Nisman has been investigating for almost a decade the 94 bombings of a Jewish community center in Buenos Aires that killed about 85 people. For most of previous investigations and his, confirmed the involvement of Iran and Hezbollah, and he actually indicted people. Just before he died, he revealed that the government of Cristina Kirchner in Argentina was colluding essentially with the Iranians to evade justice. And then he appears initially dead from by suicide in his apartment. And there's significant suspicion over his cause of death. The government in Argentina, which essentially lies about everything, has now got to convince the world that it had nothing to do with the death of this prosecutor who was about to implicate them in some serious criminality. So it's a real crisis for the current government. And of course, the United States has nothing to say, completely absent, has done nothing to, sort of criticize these accords between Buenos Aires and Tehran, and another mess on right here in our neighborhood.
One with obviously significant implications for the people of Argentina most immediately, but conceivably also for our concerns about the penetration, which you have done so much to warn about, Roger Noriega, of Iran in this hemisphere. Let me turn to another area where the administration, unfortunately, is not being silent. It's pursuing rather aggressively an agenda of normalizing relations with Fidel Castro's regime. Your successor, Roberta Jacobson, has been down in Cuba recently trying to formalize this arrangement. What did you make of her visit, and what do you expect to come next in terms of this process of apparently appeasing the Cubans pretty much across the board?
Well, it's interesting that this administration and the bureaucrats at the State Department can't even capitulate effectively. Yesterday, Raul Castro, at one of these meetings of South American leaders, announced that he was asserting as a precondition to the normalization of relations the return of Guantanamo to Cuba, as well as the lifting of the embargo and all of that. So essentially, the president's new initiative on Cuba has collapsed because, predictably, they can't negotiate with this irascible, implacable dictator, and they were too naive and couldn't figure that out in 18 months of negotiations that this man was not trustworthy. So it remains to be seen whether they continue to go hat in hand to Havana in this exercise, but it makes the United States look extraordinarily weak and foolish, and the implications for our security are pretty profound when our enemies see, again, that we can't shoot straight even when it comes to appeasement.
Let me ask about how they may be perceiving this in one particular regard. Roger Noriega, again, former U.S. Ambassador to the Organization of American States and former Assistant Secretary of State for Western Hemisphere Affairs. The administration has, as we've seen with Iran, and we're talking about that elsewhere in the program, been determined to get a deal, no matter how resistant to our importuning and even our concessions they have been. The same presumably will operate here, the president having made this normalization of relations one of his legacy projects. I can only imagine how concerted the effort will be made by Roberta Jacobson and others in the administration, despite the Castro's unwillingness to play ball. Roger, one thing in particular that has alarmed me is the possibility that as part of this deal, a part of the appeasement program that they've engaged in, the administration may relinquish to Cuba the facility at Guantanamo Bay that has, of course, been used most recently to detain some of the world's most dangerous jihadists. But talk, if you would, as well about the possibility that were that facility to be transferred to the Cubans, it would mean a very strategically located deep water port, perhaps being made available to some of the Cubans' friends like Russia, China, maybe even Iran.
Right. As we look to surrender politically, we also may be surrendering territorially. I just assume that the so-called negotiators of the Obama administration will just look for ways to accede to Raul Castro's demands now that we give him Guantanamo. while all this has been going on, our enemies have been swarming over the island. The Chinese are there. Certainly the Russians are there. And the North Koreans even have a hand in right here, 90 miles from our shores. And the Russians have been made no mistake and no secret about their intentions of establishing a military base again in Cuba. And Guantanamo, that port there, will be a terrifically valuable strategic resource for our enemies to have right here, again, close to our shores in the middle of the Western Hemisphere.
Yeah, and especially, I'm afraid, close to a very important American naval facility. Well, it's actually several, including in Florida, but I'm thinking specifically of Kings Bay, Georgia, where we've housed, as you know, Roger, our strategic ballistic missile submarines. And were the Russians, the Chinese, or others perhaps able to loiter off of those very sensitive facilities, that adds dangerously to, I think, the reliability and credibility of our deterrent. That's not something we ought to be trifling with. Let me turn quickly to another topic, Roger. You've, of course, been following closely developments in Venezuela. There are reports that the situation, the economic circumstances of the regime have reached such a perilous state as a result of the fall of the price of oil, that they may actually have to reduce somewhat the subsidies, the unimaginably generous subsidies. I'm told that the price of a gallon of gasoline in Venezuela is the equivalent of 0.002 cents per gallon. If the Venezuelans have to back off that subsidy, is that likely to create economic conditions domestically that might result in the end of this regime there?
Well, it'll be explosive. You know, the economic impact on individuals in Venezuela might be de minimis, but the giving up that sort of patrimony of cheap gas will be a very devastating political signal. And it comes as there are food shortages, half-mile food lines all over Venezuela's major cities, and some renewed talk of demonstrations. And just last night, the regime passed a decree authorizing use of deadly force against demonstrators. This, by the way, at the same time, the State Department has refused to sanction human rights violators as required under a law that was passed in December. So again, these little things, these little messages that we send, lack of resolve, devastate U.S. credibility, which is after all our most important weapon. Is our word and our credibility and the impression that we give a damn about what's happening around us.
You do, for sure, and all of us are the better for having the opportunity to take counsel from you, Roger Noriega. We have to leave it at that for the moment. I appreciate so much your expertise as well as your past and continuing service to our country, notably at American Enterprise Institute and, of course, InterAmericanSecurityWatch.org. Keep it up. Come back to us again soon. I hope that the rest of you will come back to us again tomorrow. Same time, same station. Until then, this is Frank Gaffney. Thanks for listening.
From the nation's capital, you've been listening to Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney.